Hey, Robert.
Hey, you're on.
So we've talked in the past about failure and about risk taking and the importance of risk taking in a variety of different ways. But it's this is an issue that seems to be really, really crucial and really, really important because it keep coming back. And one of the interesting, I think, perspectives that we've been talking about recently, or we've read some stuff about recently, is about the risk of not taking risks, and this perspective on what happens if you don't take the risk of developing nuclear power. What does the future look like? Is it a more risky future? What is the risk of not developing AI, and not putting the resources that you normally would out of fear? Is the future more risky or because you haven't taken the risk now? So this idea of risk, of increased risk in the future because you're not taking risk in the present, how do you think about that in the context of ingenuism?
Well, in ingenuism, it all shows up through exploration and discovery. And the way you progress is that you discover new insights. You get more connected, or you actually discover new things that then everyone else can connect to. So that's a really powerful force for progress. And exploration it's not inherently risky in an absolute, like capital T truth sense, but it is something that feels risky and can be very risky. And it's actually kind of amazing that we evolved to be risk takers, because the downside of risk in most of history was death. If you got injured, you were likely to starve. If you It was just the things that occur to us as risky used to be really risky. And we react to stimulus. Risk is something that could be quantified. You could treat it scientifically, but fear is an emotion, and we react to risk, with a visceral fear that we don't then think through. And as a species, you can definitely see how we benefit from risk taking, although there are people who apparently would argue against that. But as individuals, it's for most of history, it's been a pretty bad bet to be a big risk taker. And even today, if you look at the returns to entrepreneurship, and people have tried to measure this, there are these massive payoffs, like winning the lottery. If you start a company that becomes a leading technology company, or leading any company. But most entrepreneurial ventures have a relatively close to market expected return, and they're much riskier than if you were to invest in some kind of broad market index.
So how should we think about risk? What do we mean actually by risk? Is it just that something won't succeed? Is it that the world gets worse because of what we've done, or our lives get worse of what we've done? Because in finance, we often measure risk as just standard deviation, which is, not particularly useful necessarily, because everybody's really concerned is just the downside, not the upside, not the volatility itself. So how should we think in this context about risk?
Well, standard deviation is really useful when you have symmetric distributions that you can observe, which is zero of life. And so most people think about risk as the downside, and not just a small downside, but what's the chance and the impact of a large downside. So if we think about getting on a plane, obviously everything we do in life is a risk, besides lying in our bed, and even that has its own risks. So we get on a plane, there are certain risks we take, but the evolution of commercial flight has gotten us to a point where the likelihood of something bad happening is so small that the fact that if it were to happen would be catastrophic, we basically ignore, because it hasn't happened in 20 years, despite hundreds of thousands or millions of flights. And so when we think about a catastrophic outcome as being the measure of risk, then it actually gives us something to focus on when we are trying to actually look at risk in an objective way. Because once you realize that risk is the catastrophic outcome, you start it feeds right into ingenuism. You start experimenting in ways that are low risk in the sense that the outcome isn't catastrophic. So you're taking relatively small downside in order to learn about what the actual distribution might look like, or what the actual upside is, or what the actual risks are. And the real problem becomes, you know, both as a society, but also in our individual lives, is when we don't take those small steps, because they are risky, they just don't have a catastrophic downside. We don't take those small steps, so we don't learn, and then we end up missing out on the upsides that were there all along. And we were too afraid to take the plunge to learn that.
Yeah, so when you said, you know, staying in bed, it occurred to me that actually staying in bed is very risky. There are all kinds of health consequences. There are all kinds of things that are pretty catastrophic. But on a societal level, maybe the biggest risk we can take, in a sense, with no upside, is stagnation. That is, when we stagnate, we are exposing ourselves to great risks, and we're missing out on all the upside, on all the opportunities for growth that exists in indeed taking risks.
I certainly am aligned with that. I think that people naturally don't evaluate how small a risk is possible, how little downside is possible, in order to start learning about what the actual risks are. People are not naturally good at that. They're naturally good at imagining the worst case outcome, because that's a strong survival skill. Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of society, you know, it's stagnation is likely to lead to zero-sum thinking, even more zero-sum thinking than we have today, to fighting over resources, to fighting over output, to a lot of conflict, versus when there is significant progress, then you have a path to everyone getting a better future, and not just I can get a better future if I somehow, you know, steal from your future. And if you look at evolutionarily successful strategies, there's a lot of this sort of weirdness that gets built into it. And I'm not an expert in to say what, you know, that is for human beings, why people will take risks. But if you look at simple cases like oak trees and squirrels, when you have oak trees producing acorns and the squirrels eat the acorns, and if the oak trees produce a lot of acorns, the squirrels will bury them and new oak trees will grow, because they won't eat them all because there are lots of acorns. Except if there are lots of acorns, you end up with lots of squirrels, and eventually they start eating all the acorns, and the oak trees are producing all these acorns for no benefit to the oak tree species. Yep. And so how it plays out is the oak trees produce a moderate amount of acorns for years, and then every, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, the oak trees will produce a massive number of acorns. And there aren't very many squirrels relative to the number of acorns, so they bury a bunch of them, because that's what the squirrels are. They're basically acorn burying and eating machines. And then a bunch of new oak trees start growing, and the squirrel population goes up. But then the next year, we go back to the moderate number of acorns, yeah, and the squirrel population comes back down. And so you have a little bit of that same thing, I think, going on at a very high level with risk taking. Is people generally don't want to take risks, but then at certain points in their lives, or certain individuals, will take risks that kind of make no sense from an individual standpoint, from a species standpoint, from our humanity's making progress perspective. It's extremely valuable.
So give us an example of that.
Well, if you think about SpaceX, you know, we had stagnation in space travel, and you could go back to basically any big movement forward in physical movement. Yeah. You could go back to trains, you could go back to airplanes. You know, the early stuff is extremely non-economic and extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. So SpaceX, you know, almost went out of business. It's the famous story, and I don't know this firsthand, I've just heard the story like everybody else, that, you know, they had three rockets that crashed, and they learned a lot from those crashes, but you have to stay solvent until you've learned enough to be able to not crash. And SpaceX was running out of money, and they got a $20 million investment from the PayPal mafia. and got the fourth launch, and the fourth launch was successful. And then they were able to raise more money, because if all you're learning is that the rockets crash, even though inside the company you're going like, we're really close, that's hard to communicate that credibly. So there's this survival, whether you're talking about an individual in prehistoric times or you know, less, much less, but even in modern times, but particularly for companies or organizations, there is a risk of not surviving, of not being able to continue to go forward. And that is what we would call catastrophic failure. And that's not the kind of failure we're talking about in Ingenuism when we talk about having a productive relationship with failure. It's those failures that get you to the point where you're no longer failing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's true in all realms of life in terms of risk, not just the financial risk, but people have taken risks with their lives, people take risks with their careers in order to move things forward. You know, Galileo takes a risk with his life to some extent. He's not sure how the church will respond. It doesn't respond as badly as maybe some people would have assumed. It doesn't respond positively either. When he suggests a particular alignment of the skies and bodies and the sun and the earth, but academics who are proposing a new theory about X, about anything, it doesn't matter, they're unlikely to be published for a long time. A lot of seminal papers that we know in finance didn't get published for a long time. It could really hurt your academic career. In every realm, the risk might be differently measured, but any innovation, any step forward, any movement of human beings forward requires accepting that risk and taking that risk.
Yes, and it rarely makes sense from the individual's perspective versus the safer path. Unless
it makes sense, it depends. I would argue it makes a lot of sense from the individual's perspective, but it depends on what we mean by sense. Right.
And I was going to qualify that, and unless you are really focused on the experimentation, exploration, learning, discovering things cycle, because then if you can avoid the catastrophic risk, if you can say, I'm not going to write these, eight boring papers and get tenure. I'm going to write this one really important paper that's going to change the world. And then if it doesn't, not only if it doesn't pan out, but if it doesn't get published, or even if it gets published, but doesn't get recognized, in the enough time, then you actually are out of your career. And that would apply to a lot of situations. But if you could, do a smaller experiment that would give you a sense, then it suddenly becomes a completely different story. And those type of risks, the little risks, or what sometimes there's a book called Little Bets, those are what are the most valuable in life, because they lead to the big bets. Because at some point you have to go all in. But going all in at the beginning, it does work out and it is good for society, but it's a very risky for the individual.
It is very risky for individuals, and luckily there's some individuals who are willing to do it, because I do think they're willing to do it because they enjoy the process, and the upside is so huge, right? There is a huge benefit at the end if they're successful, even if the probability of that success is very small.
And there's also, I think, I know that there's an element of people having trust in themselves.
Yep.
That if this, take Elon Musk, he's independently wealthy in the 90s. Then he starts X.com, that's outside funded. It becomes PayPal. Now he's rich, not just independently wealthy. And then he puts all of his money into Tesla and SpaceX. And neither of them were guaranteed. If the fourth launch hadn't worked, or if there hadn't been the big loans during the financial crisis from the federal government, it's not clear that either of those companies would have survived. I'm not saying they wouldn't have, I'm just saying that it's uncertain. And so you go from being not just independently wealthy, but wealthy at a level that most people can only dream of, to potentially being broke. You have to have a lot of trust in yourself that, well, if that happens, I'm going to go back and do something again. And it makes sense from a distance, because you think about somebody who has been successful in a certain career or as an entrepreneur, or whatever they're doing, They've done that. They know how to do that. There's no reason for them to think they won't be able to do that again, but that's not how most people live. They're not reaching for more because they're worried about keeping what they have, because we don't always have trust that we could get it back if we lost it.
And there's a life cycle here. I think people are far more inclined towards, I mean, I think it's a reality that people are much more inclined towards risk as they, when they're young. And when they can rebound, when rebound is easy, and when they can rebuild it, build it up again, you know, as people get older, they become less risk. They take less risks.
And that, if we're thinking about catastrophic outcomes, that exactly aligns up. And so I'm not saying that people don't have good instincts about this, although I will say they don't have good instincts about it. So
no, they don't.
Let me retract that. Because generally, even, you know, at our age and stage of our careers, there's a lot we could do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably a lot less risky for us to, if we were to, you know, go all in on Ingenuism and spend every last dime we had to promote it because we think it's that important, which I do, that seems crazy. And at the same time, it would probably work out fine, even if it didn't work out fine.
Probably. That's where the self-confidence comes in. And that indeed increases with age. So hopefully, right, if you live right, then the self-confidence increases with age. And some of the self-confidence of young people is a little bit, some hubris is involved there.
Which has its own benefits.
So in terms of personal lives, in terms of personal stuff that one does in one's life, how does this risk-taking and taking small bets really apply?
Well, you have to be able to learn from the small bets. And this is where, you know, we struggle when we think about health and longevity, because, you know, if you eat well for a week, your blood pressure might go down, your body fat might go down a little bit, but it's hard to measure. And, you know, for most people, eating well for a week is a big deal. And so having any sort of immediate feedback is extremely useful. And that's why, you know, it's so much more fun to run the hedge fund than it is to be an academic, because you get immediate feedback, and you can learn from that and you can adapt and evolve. And so you want to look for not opportunities, but where you can create that kind of immediate feedback. And, you know, I say a week is a long time, but it's not really. I mean, you could take a opportunity to change your diet for 6 months or to change your exercise. And now we have ways to measure how that would be impacting your health that didn't exist even 10 years ago. So the way that we use small bets is by figuring out how we're going to learn from them before we start making the small bets, because small bets they're not catastrophic downsides. So they're low risk, but the upside only exists if you can get into that cycle of learning.
I mean, this is why most people date a lot before they get married. Marriage is a big risk.
You want to
get as much information as possible, and you want to have as much experience as possible before you make the commitment.
And it's why it makes sense to try new things, and to meet new people. As you get older, we tend not to do that, not because it's risky, but because we are, I think, satisfied with where we are. But it's, you know, I guess if I'm on my deathbed, you know, trying to make new friends with a guy in his deathbed next to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because there is a lower downside, yeah, that is also a lower upside. But for me, where I think that this is, you know, had the biggest in terms of thinking about failure as a way to avoid catastrophic outcomes by investing less, I think Ingenuism is the place where we've done that the most. I mean, there's been a lot of complications since we started doing Ingenuism, but these weekly or most weekly discussions are a way to make a small bet on evolving this thinking and this framework in our own minds and our own life to, in a sense, get it ready for prime time because I really think I think it's very important, but I think about it very differently than I did 2 years ago, much less 3 years ago. And having evolved that with very small investment, I think is really valuable once we decide what we want to do with it.
Absolutely. That is a good note on which to end today's segment. We'll be back next week.